Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume. Improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast, where you'll find the perfect blend of food, fun, and cooking knowledge. I'm your host, Carl Fiadini. Welcome to the number one podcast in the country. Well, number one podcast in 3 countries. It's a pretty amazing thing happening right now in our world. We're recording on site at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive, and I get to eat it. Here's a humble request to give us a follow on Instagram at Walk and Show, please and thank you. I'm into quality smoked fish dips and spreads. I know you are too. Check out our friends over at Crab Island Seafood Company. Visit them at crabislandseafooddip.com and order yours today. Last week, we had Chef Brandon Clark, creative mind behind Hot Sauce Darling, Clark and Hopkins. Super inspiring episode. Go back and listen up. I lived in Brooklyn as a child. There are many things I miss and fond memories I cherish with my family. Kind of like dunking the bread into my grandmother's sauce pot and all the homemade old school Italian food during the holidays. I also miss L&B Pizza in Bensonhurst. It's my all-time favorite. But you know what else I miss? Street cart hot dogs. To spend time with me, my Uncle Anthony would say, "Hey, Carlucci, let's go take a ride in the car." We'd go to Radio Shack or Crazy Eddie's, and then inevitably, we'd stop for some dirty water hot dogs. It was an experience. The snap of the hot dog skin, all the flavors, washing it down with a Yoo-Hoo or a Mellow Yellow, just standing on the corner and eating, talking, listening to his stories and topics that, frankly, were probably inappropriate for a 7-year-old. That's the way it was back then. These moments were indeed special to me. Who would think that behind the veil of my happy, nostalgic food memories are the actual struggles of what it takes to be a food vendor on the streets of New York. Today, we're going to dive into a remarkable journey of our guest, Dan Rossi, New York's hot dog king. It's a fascinating story, but first, let's welcome Jefferson back to the studio. What's cooking, baby? We missed you last week.
Yeah, I had some fun up over in New Hampshire. It kind of inspired the menu for today. reached out to one of our farmers and one someone that supports us, Vicky Webster over at Happy Tales. And she gave us some cooney pork. And we have a pork tenderloin and a pork chop that we're going to do, two different ones. Since it is about to start being apple season up in New England, I was like, I wrote this menu as funny as anything because Keith was like, hey, remember where we got those cider donuts? It's right on the way. We ended up getting it on Sunday. We ended up going back up to, we forgot a catering rental unit, just one box, 1.5 hour away, 3 hour drive to go pick the box up. Yeah. Catering. Love it.
Hashtag adventure.
Yeah, right. Well, we made the best of it because we got some cider donuts. So it's an apple cider donut, apple cider brined pork chop with a apple cider crumble with blue cheese, candied pecans, and braised greens. Then the pork tenderloin is going to be grilled figs, prosciutto, burrata, blister tomatoes, pickled fennel with roasted potatoes. And then I wanted to do, because it's getting a little bit fall-like in other parts of the country besides Florida, because it's still 95% humidity. I ended up doing a chili, but it's with hatch chilies, which are from New Mexico. Some of her chicken that is just absolutely phenomenal. We're going to do some pickled avocado and then garlic chili crisp and then bourbon bacon to finish that off to give it some depth and complexity.
Yeah, what was in that jar that you...
That is the chili crisp that I make.
Yeah, I wanted to just like start spooning it right there.
Yeah, so mine actually has cinnamon, star anise, shallots, garlic, chili flakes, a little touch of gochujang, and also thin soy on it.
I didn't eat last night.
Good.
In anticipation for today. And I didn't have anything for breakfast. So I just want you to know it's going to be serious today.
That's Starving Marvin.
Yeah, totally Starving Marvin.
And I was just listening to finishing the podcast from last week, and I love the sandwich reference, how John likes to do sandwiches. There's no sandwiches today.
Man, I'll tell you what. It was a great week. Last week was fun, man. We had a really...
Sounded like it.
Yeah, we had a good time.
Maybe I should go out of town more often.
You should probably... You know what? Get out of here, kid. Scram, you know? Listen, by the way, today we're going to be shooting our acceptance speech for the People's Choice Awards for the podcast category. And it's not that we've won anything, but we're in the finals and we have to actually shoot this in order, when we find out actually who does win. And if it is us, we'll have it prepared. Super stoked about this.
It's an amazing feat. I mean, think about how many 5 million listeners down to 20,000 listeners that are going to pick the People's Choice. And there's 9 other podcasts, including us, would be 10.
Yeah. I mean, whittle down to 10. We're in that final 10. I don't know, man.
It's an honor just being mentioned in those different podcasts.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to have, you know, like on our email, you know, signature, you know, if we don't win.
Nominated,
right?
Yeah. I guess. Why not?
I don't know.
I mean, it's that's a huge feat.
So stoked. Mm-hmm. Equally as excited to jump into the food today. I'm ready to rock and roll, man.
Well, too bad we don't have dirty hot dogs.
So I know.
That was a couple weeks ago.
You know, as I was writing the monologue out, and I did that early this morning, about 3 a.m, and I was like, hey, you know what? This is what I was feeling. And I actually, it brought back like that actual snap of the dog, caniches, like all that stuff, man. I miss it. It's been a long time.
It's funny you mentioned caniches, and somebody was talking to me about something. Believe it or not, I think they're trending because Universal Studios actually sells potato caniche street food.
No kidding.
Yeah, in Orlando. I was amazed, yeah. Especially for what they charge. It's like... $10?
Well, sure. They're not making a killing on that. Well, listen, here's the thing. You know, when you're talking like caniche, you're talking hot dog, stuff like that. I haven't had a Manhattan special in a million years. And I feel like, you know, sometime this coming week, I'm going to have to go off on a search. You know, I need to like quench
the craving.
Yeah.
You know what you need to wash it down with is an egg cream. I can't believe you had a Yoo-Hoo instead of an egg cream.
Well, but I was a kid. That's what I used to get at the carts, man. Yeah. I used to get a Yoo-Hoo, yeah. A kid, you know, and my uncle would get like a Manhattan special or whatever. And where I would get a mellow. Yeah. That's what I had. Right. And I dig it. But anyhow, speaking of all of this, you know, hot dogs and New York street food. I think we should usher in our guest today.
Yeah, I think so too.
Dan Rossi, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
Thank you kindly. Yeah, we had, you and I had a long conversation a couple of weeks ago, kind of talking about your rise, if you will, in this, you know, hot dog street cart world over there, and then fall and then rise again. And I think the story is incredible. And I do have questions here for you, but before we jump into questions, like if you could give kind of an airplane view of, you know, who you are, where you came from, and, you know, how you got into the food cart business, hot dog specifically, that would be terrific.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm a native New Yorker. I'm an Italian-American. And right out of high school, I went into the Marine Corps. I did a few tours in Vietnam. And when I came out, I became a sheet metal apprentice in the trades, and then a mechanic, naturally. And while I was in the shop, one of the old-timers had a heart attack and asked me to build him a hot dog cart. And after I was done, he felt better and he didn't want it. So I was stuck with this hot dog cart, and I said, you know, let me try and sell it. And as soon as I put it for sale, I sold it. So that became my business. I started to, you know, at home at night, I would build a cart. When it was done, I'd sell it. I ended up being the largest hot dog company in the city's history. Within about 10 years, I had 500 carts on the street, which is a pretty amazing feat. That's a pretty amazing feat. But because of my background as a veteran and pretty much an advocate for veterans, the city went ahead and removed all the vets from Midtown Manhattan. And if you saw it at the time, there were only about 20, 30 guys doing it. So I got involved.
What decade was that?
Oh, this is the 90s.
Okay.
And they went ahead and I got involved. It took a little while, but I managed to reverse the law. And because I did it, I had to be punished, they told me, because a lot of bigwigs were behind this thing. And they went ahead and they actually passed the law and took away my business, which was another amazing thing. And that kind of dragged me out. You know, I went from owning a beautiful home in Greenwich, Connecticut. If you know anything about Greenwich, it's one of the finest places to live in the country. And ended up living in a van, me and my wife. So I went ahead and I said, you know, what are we going to do? I mean, you know, when we went from nothing to having a great life to having less than nothing now. So I said, you know what? I'm going to sell hot dogs. And I went to help out a vet in front of the Met who was having trouble. And he was a very disturbed guy, you know, PTSD and all that. And he just gave up. And I said, I had my youngest daughter with me. And I said, you know what? I'm going to get a cart and I'm going to start doing this. And I didn't want to upset the apple cart. You know, I had enough of that politics stuff. I didn't want to be involved with any of it. So I didn't actually go in front of the Met. I went a couple blocks away. And as soon as I set up, they started to harass me, the police. And, you know, so I told them, I said, after about 40 times, I said, look, now, every time you come here, I'm going to move 10 feet closer to the Met. And they did. As they were writing tickets to me, I'm moving the push cart. I mean, it became comical because none of these tickets ever stuck. I wasn't doing anything wrong. And then finally, I ended up right in front of the Met. I said, what are you going to do? And they arrested me. And that was the best day of my life, to be honest with you. And
well, wait a minute. I can't let you. Hold on. I can't let you get passed on that. So you get arrested. It's the best day of your life. Why?
Because what happened was there were quite a few illegal vendors there. And when they saw me get arrested, they just scattered. And when I came back the next day, no one bothered me. So I says, I knew I wasn't breaking any laws. I says, now I got them. Now I know I can be here. And that started to establish me as the hot dog king. I mean, it just took off. And, you know, one thing led to another. This 18 years later, I'm still here. I'm still getting harassed. I'm still getting tickets. I'm still getting shut down. But it's all nonsense. It's just the smoke and mirrors that they're doing.
What was the challenge that you had? So when you transitioned from manufacturing to actually becoming a food vendor, what kind of hiccups were you experiencing there.
Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
My goal always was, even when I built cars, I always tried to make the best I could do. And the thing we were having here was just what hot dog to sell and how to sell it. You know, because I had hundreds, I had carts, but I never actually physically vended. You know, there's a big difference between building a cart and putting it on the street and actually being behind that cart. So, but it didn't take me long to get into the knack. I kind of enjoyed it. But the thing was to find the best thing. Now, you guys talk about the dirty water hot dog. Well, that's a thing of the past, to be honest with you. There was a time when every hot dog manufacturer made a hot dog with a casing on it. So the water wouldn't affect it as bad. But now all the hot dogs have no casing. So if you went ahead and put a package of these uncased hot dogs in water, some of them shrink, some of them get big. Yeah. I mean, really, it's a different hot dog from what you guys remember when you were younger. And so the best way to cook a hot dog is on a flat grill. So that's what I did. I built the flat grill, and then the next thing was to find the right hot dog. So you just can't go and buy a specialty hot dog because you have to have consistency. You know, you have to be, this has to be reliable. So I went through every single brand of hot dog that we could buy locally, and you know, that's common to buy, to find the right one. And once we hit on that, that was a home run. We found the perfect hot dog to put on a flat grill.
Well, let me ask you this, Dan, is
yeah.
When you found a hot dog,
yeah.
Everybody's buying a different brand by and large, or is there, you know, a handful of go-tos, or is everybody looking for that next new one, or how does that work?
If you walk down the street and you saw a hot dog cart that has two different umbrellas with two different names of hot dogs, never look at the umbrella and assume that you're going to buy that hot dog. Most vendors buy whatever they can find is cheap. Some of them are beef, some of them are anything. I don't know what they are in them, but believe me, don't get fooled by that. You know, and it's a bad thing because some of these companies are pretty good companies, and then they find out somebody's eating something that's not what they think they are. You know, if you, I don't know if I can mention names, but if you went to buy a certain brand, unless you see the package of those hot dogs, you're probably not getting it. There's, you know, they'll put anything in front of you.
But there's oversight to that too, no?
Yeah, there's no oversight.
Uh-huh.
For who?
I mean, no. If they're doing anything illegal, they're not going to be able to get anything, right?
Yeah. What are they doing illegal?
Right. No, I'm saying if they're a street vendor and they're doing it illegal, right, and they're not set up there, like you said at the beginning, when they busted people, saw you get busted, they all fled because they were doing illegal, like vending.
Yeah,
they're not gonna care what's in the hot dog. They're gonna buy the cheapest one, like you said. So there's no truth in menu.
They don't care about anything. All they care about is grabbing your dollar and handing it to you.
So then, what makes your hot dogs different or better than the competitor?
Well, there's the consistency. If you bought a hot dog today and bought one 6 months from now, it's exactly the same thing. Hmm. You know, and the grill does it. You know, when I said that they don't have casings anymore, if you put it on a flat grill, you get a crunch with this hot dog. You know, so that's it. You've got the taste. You got the same hot dog. People come from us 2-3 years ago, Dan, you know, and it's the same thing. That matters. Not that they come today and they taste the one kind of hot dog, come tomorrow and something else. You know, and our relationship with the people. I mean, we just have a great relationship with the people who live around here, and that's a hard thing to do because these are pretty wealthy people. You know, and they're by me all the time. You know,
Do you ever get customers that you know, have yours. They pay X amount of dollars. But then there's a guy, you know, another cart, you know, 30 yards, 50 yards away, something like that. And they undercut you by a buck or 50 cents. Do you get a lot of that? Is there that sort of?
Oh, it's just the opposite. In front of the museum here, it's all tourists. So we have a price list. So you're always going to pay what's on the price list. But if you go to a cart that 20 feet from me, you might pay 30 bucks for a hot dog. They charge you by your look. So if they think you're a visitor, you're a tourist, you're going to get hit, you know. But, you know, and that's the way it is. It's never undercut. Forget about undercut. They're overcharging these people by a ton.
So then what's the difference between being in front of the Met and then, you know, being, you know, blocks and blocks away, maybe just more towards residential or something like that? When you're
you go residential and you're getting the people who live there. They're New Yorkers. They're not going to fall for a $30 hot dog. But you get somebody from China who doesn't even know what's going on. You know, I've seen 8-year-old Chinese kids walk up to us with $100 bills. Now, you can imagine what would happen if they went to these other guys. You know, they just, I'll tell you the truth. They just watch you. They take that shot that you're a tourist, and then they hit you because there's no price list.
So
and once they hand you that hot dog and you take it and they say $10 or $15, you end up paying it, you know.
That's insane.
Well, some people, you know, I can't tell you how many times I see a hot dog thrown at one of these guys or a fight break out. Or it's almost everyday occurrence because they picked on the wrong person.
See, what you got to do is you got to set up a camera to catch all that
reality
stuff.
TV, man. Yeah,
absolutely. So is it safe to say – Dan, is it safe to say that? And put send it to me. You send it to me. I'll take care of everything. Okay. So, is it safe to say that location matters? Is that like the, in your opinion, top three most important things for a New York City food vendor? Is it location or quality?
Location. Mm. And then you got to find the quality, but you have to be in a good spot. You know, there are, I'll tell you the truth, I know some vendors that are in areas that you would never believe made money, but they have a consistent customer base. They make a good product and that, but they're not getting the tourists. They're getting the guy who works in a factory or in a building, the janitors and the doormen and all that. And they end up, and it's almost as if they could tell what they're going to make by the end of the day before they even start the day because they see the same people every day.
Well, I always thought that was... Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, but when I am, it's not that way. You know, we have our regulars, but it's nothing compared to what they have. We're 99% tourists. They're 99%, you know, regulars. And that's the world of difference. And if they get that location, they're great. They do great. You know,
I think that's what's interesting is, you know, you can get somebody who makes, I don't know, $500,000 a year, and somebody makes 40 grand a year, and everybody's eating hot dogs on the street. You know, it's pretty.
That can happen.
Yeah.
You know, some really lucrative locations in the city. A problem with us is we do fine in the summer, but Labor Day just passed. We went down 25% in 2 weeks.
So
that's it. And then it'll come back up, you know, in October. But that 1 month kind of says we go down into a valley and then we start to climb back up again. But then by January, we're back down in the valley again. But locations in Midtown where it's the workers, there's no slump. You know, a coffee cart in Midtown, they know what they're going to make every day of the week. They see the same people every day of the week. You know, so and if they could survive on that, they're doing great. You know,
how do you hold your spot at the Met? How do you keep that same position?
Well, what we do is that at night to clean the cart and bring the cart back, and then I park my van across the street and I go to sleep. And I've been doing that for 12 years.
There's no other way to do that, huh?
I have to be here overnight and keep an eye on the cart.
This is a lifestyle.
it's lousy, let me tell you. I would much rather be sleeping in a nice bed, you know.
But so, well, expand on that a little bit, Dan, because so you had this life, right, before you were in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Things were awesome. And then you kind of, you know, let's just say you get kicked in the belly and you know, here you are, you're sleeping in your van to hold a spot for the cart at the Met, I mean, you're making money, right? I mean, it's a good living. It has to be.
Here's the way it works. We'll do fine in that 6 months, and then I have to have a little cushion to get us through the winter. So it is that way. It's survival more than making money, to be honest with you. You know, I'm not a young kid anymore. I'm going to be 75, you know, and there are too many more opportunities. I can't go in a sheet metal shop and go bang metal. Those days are gone, you know. But I fell into this. I actually got trapped into this because of the illegals again. Right now, in front of the Met, there are 10 carts. And where I'm legal, the rest of them are not legal. And the city is complacent with them. You have no idea how bad the city is right now in vending. There are more illegal vendors in the city than I've ever heard of. And there's nothing they do about it. There's absolutely zero enforcement. They've given up on enforcing vending. And what saves me is the fact that we have bus stops and things. That's the one thing you can't do. You can't go in a bus stop or a taxi stand. And we're like a little oasis. You know, so there's nothing immediate. I got one cart maybe 30 feet from us, but the rest are a half a block away. So that saves me. But we're talking about maybe myself and one other cart around the entire Central Park are legal and the rest are not. And they're not going to touch these people. It's just the way it is right now.
That's kind of like what's going on with the hotels where the illegals are actually staying at hotels. I saw some some stuff about that. And a friend of mine actually visited New York a couple of months ago and inadvertently stayed at one of those hotels and, you know, was genuinely fearful of his life.
It's bad.
Yeah.
Bad. Yeah. One of the problems is we had a lot of newcomers come in. You know, I don't call people illegal. We had a lot of newcomers come in and they can't work because this you have to be able to work legally in the city. You know, like when I hire someone, I have to make sure I can put them on the books. And the city doesn't allow them to work legally. So what do? They either end up, I don't know, there's not that much crime, but it's a bad atmosphere. But then a lot of them end up going on the street vending. You'll see blankets all over the street with them selling knockoff jewelry or handbags or hats or whatever they're doing. And we're talking about a lot of them. We're not talking about a few people. We're talking about hundreds. And, you know.
Is it worse now than it was? Is it worse now over there than it was like in the 70s, early 80s?
Oh, I was there. I started in the late 70s and early 80s. It was bad. Just five times worse now. Wow. That's how bad it was. It's really bad. If you go down into Midtown where you never saw these people, they're lined up toe-to-toe a whole block long. It's in down Times Square. You don't even want to go to Times Square. I mean, it's just all over the place.
So you're you're a man in the know. Like you're there. You're boots on the ground, so to speak. What's the fix? How do they fix this? Is there a fix?
One thing would help if the city allowed these people to work legally. Then they'd get hired. There's plenty of work. There's plenty of places looking for people to work. That would help. And the second thing is enforcement. The police wiped their hands of vending. They took them out of vending. The health department doesn't do a thing. You know, and what they do is they put vending in the Department of Sanitation's hands. What the hell do they know about vending, the sanitation people? That was the biggest joke in the world. You know, they need some enforcement. You know, not Gestapo-style thing, but you have to go down and say, listen, guys, you can't be here. And then that'll do it. It'll start knocking them away. Especially, I got one not right outside the pickup truck right now selling, you know, fruits, you know. And she's got a little basket, and she's doing it. You got hundreds of those people here. You got to give them an opportunity to work. That would be the big deal.
So
and it's just not.
There's no food inspectors that come through to make sure that there's some, you know, standard operating procedures being enacted, cleanliness, basic stuff.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal.
Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table.
The health department is told if they're not permitted, keep walking.
Wow.
That's their word. If they're not permitted, keep walking. They could come to me and they can go down the list. I mean, there's a long list. And because I'm permitted, I'm licensed. But to them, who are you talking to? What name are they giving you? It's a waste of time. And then, you know, you give them a ticket, they throw it away. What is that? But you give me a ticket and I have to battle it, you know, because it's a whole different ballgame. But there's no oversight at all. Nothing. Zero. I'll give you an example. We did a little special for a company a few weeks ago, and they covered my cart completely with their advertising. We were giving away hot dogs for them. And right next to my cart is my daughter's cart. So inspector comes, he goes to my daughter, and we have like banners that come down off the umbrella, the advertisement, little panels. And it was blocking the permit. So he gave her a ticket for blocking the permit. This is so ridiculous. 5 feet away, and my permit is completely covered. And he didn't even, and my daughter said, well, what about my father? And he said, no, I'm here for you. So the health department only goes to a cart, or it goes after the complaint. 50 people could be there breaking the law, but they only go to that one person that they got the complaint for, and then they walk away. They close their eyes to everything else that's happened. It's just amazing, especially when you're legitimate. It really turns your stomach, you know, knowing that all this is going on and these clowns are coming here just to bother me. And I hate to say I'm used to it, but I'm almost used to it.
No, I mean, I don't know how you would get used to that. So if the community, you know, supports the, you know, the cart and, you know, other carts or whatever, does the community not care about what, you know, what they're eating or potentially eating or the, you know, health risks or anything like that? I mean, can't the community kind of like, you know, make a stand, open their mouth, do something?
To who?
The health department, I guess, no?
You got it. Have a good time. You know, funny. There's actually an organization that advocates for vendors. But the guy running it is part of the black market. And if you call 314 to make a complaint, they send you to him.
All it's going to take is a group of people getting sick from a vendor, and that's when the boat's going to hit the fan. That's the only thing.
That's different. But who wants to see people get sick?
I understand that, but that's
nobody.
That's why we. You have to be permitted.
The city waits for people for something bad to happen before they act. When they can resolve it before anything bad happens. They don't do it. There's nobody in charge that's going to take that responsibility. It's not happening.
I was shocked when we spoke the first time, Dan, and you were kind of laying some breadcrumbs down for me with some of this info. And I'm actually more shocked today, to be honest with you. It's just for you to kind of go deeper in it a little bit and hearing it. It's shocking.
Yeah,
it's New York City, for crying out loud.
It's New York City, and people just don't see it. I don't know. They just don't. You get complaints, you know. Back in the 90s, I mean, there was a war going against vendors. They did every possible law in the world to control us, but that was legal vendors. Everyone involved was legal. So it's easy to enforce laws against legal people. It's impossible to enforce a law against an illegal person.
They're already breaking the law.
When they told me that the inspector said, look, if it's got no permit, we're told to keep going. So that told you everything. That told you the whole story.
Well, they don't have any right. They don't have any jurisdiction. They only have a shutdown. They can't remove you. The law, the police officer has to do that, correct? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So.
No. The only one who can shut you down is the health department. At the end of May, just to give you an example of how things happened, they came to my push cart. What happened was about five carts set up in a bus stop not too far from me, and they started a big ruckus. So the inspectors came down, and the health department goes up to my cart. He looks at the permit, And he says, this permit's not allowed on the Fox property. And we looked at him, what are you crazy? We're here 18 years. My permit happens to probably be the oldest permit in New York City. It was issued in 1983. So he scraped the permit off my cot, shut me down, put a big poster on my cot, you can't work. So I called up his supervisor, and the supervisor was playing stupid. And then for almost 4 weeks, they wouldn't allow me to work. Until finally I started to talk a little tough. And then they reversed themselves. Oh, the permit is fine. I says, but I almost lost 4 weeks of work. And now you're telling me the permit is fine? You knew the permit was fine before you scraped it. You know, I said, you know, these are the kind of games they play. And then, you know, what can you do? You end up going to court. I'm going to end up going to court for this. I mean, I've been in court so many times in my life, I don't want to go to court, but I have to do it, you know?
I mean, you're doing a service, or you're feeding people, for crying out loud. And these guys are breaking your balls, seemingly for no reason. And, you know, unless you're squirting ketchup on the sergeant's tie or something like that. Like, what, you know, like the fact that they're, it's like they're out to get you.
Well, I'm the key. I'm the key of the whole veteran vending issue. I'm the only one who hasn't given in to their games that they're playing. I refuse to go by what they're saying because it's all unlawful. And once they get me, that's the end of the vets in the city. They're gonna completely remove any privileges we have and just throw us in with the other vendors. And that's the end of us. So they know getting me is like a home run. And they've been trying to do this for years. I mean, that, I can't tell you how many times I've been ticketed and gone to court. And they don't care about the decisions that the courts bring out. I actually argued the case in the appellate court and won. And the city said, so what? You won. We don't care what the judges say. They do what they want. They would take you to court again. It's just...
And that's
the problem.
And that specifically has to do with your permit is related to being a disabled vet, right?
It doesn't matter what permit I have. I'm the disabled vet. Mm. And the state protects me. See, that's the problem. We go under state laws, not city laws. We have to get a license from the city, but the state oversees us. And we have our own set of laws. And what they try to do is when they kicked all the vets out of Midtown years ago and I got them back, they came up with a law for them, for the people selling like general merchandise, hats and trinkets and stuff, and tried to tie it into a food vendor. And that's one of the things we went to court for and we won. We're food vendors. We're not selling hats, you know. And what they told me was they want me to give up my permit and get a license to sell hats, and then they'll give me back a different permit. I said, but you want me to get a license that doesn't allow me to sell food? He said, yeah, don't worry about that. I said, yeah, I am worried about that. What am I, a moron or something? You know, it was so stupid. And then finally they gave in. But that's what they're expecting me to do. And I'm the only one who hasn't done it. The other vets did it because they don't care. But I do care. You know, we all see things differently. And you know, I've been through much. Been through too much with the city and the government and the laws. Then when I know I'm right and when the courts back me up, I'm going to stand by what's right. I'm not going to just bend to them because that's what they want.
So you've actually, I saw your feature on Netflix, yeah. You know, what is it? USA Street Food or something like that. And you were one of the features. I thought it was pretty great. And as we're talking, you know, I do a lot of formulating on the spot, right? So we spoke, I already have opinions, we're talking, and now everything kind of changes a little bit and it, you know, comes out into the podcast.
Yeah.
You really wear the New York Hot Dog King on your sleeve. Like that's a part of your personality, right? I mean, because, you know, like you said a second ago, like, hey, I'm the last one. If they take me down, then the whole thing goes away. You're kind of like you're out there sitting on your proverbial throne, the cart, and you're sitting up there and you're going to run this to the end, huh?
Well, I'm going to go to the end. I figure I'm going to be turning 75. I got 15 more years. We'll see how it turns out.
Well, how does that work with you? You said your daughter your daughter has a cart next to you, right?
Yeah, my daughter Elizabeth. She served in the Marines too.
Excellent.
And got a permit. In fact, we had to go to court to get him a permit. I mean, that's how ridiculous it was. When the state says you have to give it, they said, we don't care what the state says. We still had to go to court and get it. So, and the reason that I have to have one next to me is because if I didn't, there would be an illegal right next to me. They'd be here in a second. That's why I sleep here every night, you know, they're in a minute. And then I actually had one police captain says, look, we'll get rid of you before them. And when you hear a police captain tell you that, you say, oh, you know, I'm on my own. I have to defend myself. And that's what I've been doing. It's not a nice thing.
So, I mean, if you don't want to answer, you don't have to. But are there, I mean, yeah. Do things get a little rough overnight, in the overnight hours or anything, like intimidation or something like that?
Yeah, they did in the beginning. You know, we had some, I remember once the five or six guys came and they went into the, I was across the street. By the time I got back across the street to the cart to chase them away, they were trying to wreck the cart, scrape the decal off. You know, a few times there was guys who thought they were tough. Well, you have no idea how tough I can be. You know, I don't take crap from anybody. We had to space them down, let them know that we're going to go to a level that they don't want to go to. And, you know, street stuff, you know, you got to sometimes turn into that. You know,
is that the same motivation? That fire, is that what brought you to write your book?
Oh, yeah. You know, what happened was that so many things went on. I mean, fighting to build the company in the beginning and to hold on to the company. And I bought a nice house. You know, we got out of a little house, bought a nice place. And what it was the abuse that I saw people doing against these disabled vets. And I could never handle abuse. I never allowed anybody to abuse anybody when I'm around. You know, there were certain things that triggered me. And when I found out that the richest people in the city were the ones abusing these men, I said, you know, come on, guys. All you have to do is help them. You know, we're not talking about 1,000 people. It's a few people. And they dug in. And I dug in. And, you know, I remember when one of the mayor's people said, back away from the vets. And I said, it's not going to happen. And he said, well, we're going to bankrupt you. I said, you do what you got to do. I says, you know, if I can guarantee you that any combat vet out there who's carried as many wounded and dead as I have is never going to ever turn their back on a vet. Never. It's not going to happen. It's in our DNA. And that was it. And, you know, when I say I'm the last, it's because in my mind, if I'm gone, the veterans are gone. You know, and maybe something will turn around and somebody will listen to me and finally straighten this out. But, you know, I have to do what I have to do.
So if you were going to give, so let's just say that there's a vet out there or somebody, it could be anybody, including a veteran, and they want to kind of get into the fold with you, or they want to have a cart, but they want to do it the right way. I mean, is there advice that you would give somebody? Tell them to don't do it at all, or what would you do?
When my daughter came back from, you know, and got out of the Corps, her battalion was in Brooklyn. And a lot of the men that were there, you know, they were coming out and they've done, you know, 2-3 tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. So they came back wobbly. You know, when you come back out of combat, you're not normal. I hate to tell you that. You don't fit in. And I must have had a half dozen guys work with me. I bring them in, calm them down. They start getting readjusted. And I said, it's time for you to go. Now go find something you can do. And I did that to at least a half dozen guys. When I started my initial sheet metal business, hired all Vietnam vets because nobody would hire them. You have to be one of them to understand them. You have to go through what they, you know, what they're going through to understand how to work around it. So the only problem I have now after the pandemic, that all stopped. You know, I just, we don't have the financial means anymore to try. We don't have that extra spot for the guy. But, you know, I had a vet call my daughter the other day. You know, I hear your dad will hire us. My daughter said, you come on down. He never came, but we said, you come on down. And we'll try and fit you in, you know, squeeze a day, 2 days, whatever we can do. You know, if you want to learn how to get a permit, we'll take you to court and get a permit. If you want a cart, I hope I'll build it. You know, when I done my company, a vet walked in the shop, he got the cart for free, a disabled vet. I never once would take a penny off a guy, you know, give him a shot. But there weren't that many of them at the time, you know. Now that's all gone, that structure, that base. Because I can't do it now because of the financial situation we're in. But I would love to do it. I would actually love it. In fact, the city last year came up with a program that was actually backed up by an individual where to help veteran small businesses, and they would give them a $20,000 grant. So I went, and I didn't know what a pitch was. So I went and did a pitch. Like I'm talking to you, that was the pitch. You know, everybody coming up with charts and all this, and I said, what the hell is this, you know? And I walked into a room, and there was about 30 people in there. So I went, I told them who I was and what I intended to do, and I said, my problem is the carts that we have are 10 years old. They're falling apart, and I don't have the money to build new carts. So I got it. I mean, the Department of Small Business Service and especially the Department of Veterans Affairs that they have in the city now, the guy who's running it is this guy, James Hinden, is the best thing that ever happened to veterans in New York City. And I got it, and I built two new carts for me and my daughter. So, and I told him, you know, there was a time when I would be the one that would be doing this. No one had asked me, I did it, but I can't do it anymore. And then people helped me. So the good that I gave out, some of it came back to me, you know? So
I don't know. A big that, shot in the- I mean, listen, you know, I'm just listening to you and, you know, I don't know what we can do. You know, we could talk about it offline, but maybe we could try to, you know, plug some resources or connections or something like that. Networking to, you know, just throw the hat in the ring with you guys. And
well, there aren't too many guys to do it. I mean, you know, if you're right now in New York City, there are probably only 5 disabled vets on food. 5. That's it. Not that I didn't get everyone a permit, because when I broke the door down to get my daughter a permit, I was able to get all the disabled vets a permit. But they went ahead and took them and leased them. Being able to do this business, a disabled person, is extremely hard. They need a lot of support. And these guys didn't have a support system. So they went and they got the permit, leased it illegally. Everything is illegal now. Everything is illegal. And that was the end of them. So when I had my company, there was a system. There were 2 other companies that were owned by vets. We joined forces to help the vets. You know, we had commissary space for them. I built the cars for them. And we taught them. That was different. But they took that away from us. The city was so against the veterans that they actually, you know, basically they put me out of business just because I was a disabled vet. That was it. And I was helping them. That was it. That's all gone. There's absolutely no effort in New York City to help us. Nobody's going to help us. And I've been to the politicians down there. They don't even listen to you. So, you know, but the way to do it is to do it on my own. If I could, I would have a shop. I would have a little commissary, and I would hire these guys to, just like I did before, to teach them how to build carts. If they want to be a vendor, teach them how to be a vendor. Put them on the street. Make them independent. Not that they work for me, that they work for themselves. That was the whole goal for this, to get the guys back out there into the world and learn to do things again. You know,
well, first,
like I said, that's rough.
First off, I want to thank you for your service and your sacrifice and your family's sacrifice for doing what you do.
Yeah.
Second off, I think one of the biggest things with our reach, I think it's important that we actually put the shine a light on things, because, you know, the old saying, we have old sayings for reasons, right? The squeaky wheel gets the oil. And the more that we squeak about this, the more that things need to change. If the city of New York is doing things against veterans, then what are you doing? Because these are the people that give us the freedoms. And after yesterday, what we celebrated, Patriot Day, which affected New York greatly, and those 3,000 people that perished, it's disgusting to hear this stuff like this.
Yeah.
You know, there's different people out there that are doing things. You know, my brother-in-law is somebody big in the Veterans Affairs and dealing with PTSD. And it's shocking to hear a city such as New York, as great as it should be, snuffing out, for lack of better terminology, snuffing out veterans. You know, the restaurant industry in itself, we seem to be the one that's the light of the moths, and the moths are the misfits and the pirates, and specifically those that have gone abroad to fight in combat, because we have the hierarchy. And I've worked with so many different veterans, and I don't know from PTSD of being in battle, but I know from seeing them and what they go through, I'm kind of disgusted with New York right now, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. It's, join the club. You know?
Yeah, and I think, you know, and unfortunately, you can't manage your business and then attack the politicians, because you have to have that quality of life, plus have the business, and you're protecting that business, because, for crying out loud, the police officers are not doing their job, quite frankly.
Nah.
I think it comes down to money.
They were told to give up on it. They were told to give up on it, the police.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of the resistance to fight this, it comes down to money. And, you know, I have a feeling that we might know some folks who are, you know, veteran focused, that we might be able to connect with and maybe figure something out there. We got to look into it a little bit.
I mean, if you're not a veteran, you should be upset, because these are people that have actually given us the freedom, maintain our freedom, and that this is what's going on to our veterans. It's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. Yep. We send boys to war, and yet they come home and we don't have any means to integrate them, like you said, because they're not ready to go back into the public, because they're in that combat mode and they're in PTSD mode. And I understand that, but this is an opportunity for us to integrate them back into the society to leave a normal life. It's quite disgusting.
Well, I gave it my best shot. I know I helped a lot of people. I mean, especially when I first started.
Well, we appreciate that.
These guys, you know, the Vietnam vets, they had it bad. I mean, we did. I mean, I remember going to VA for help, and they said, "We're not helping you guys. You're not credible." Yep. I mean, imagine that.
Yep.
And I walked on. I said, "The hell with you. I'll do it on my own. I'll do it on my own." And I did. But, you know, if you read my book, you see where I went down into that valley, and I just barely got out of it.
And by the way, the name of the book, folks, is The New York Hot Dog King, From Rags to Riches to Less Than Rags. I said that correctly?
Yeah, right on the button. All right. You get it from Amazon.
You can get it. I was just going to say that. You can get it on Amazon. Check it out. Listen, Dan Paizan, I appreciate you coming on the show today. If people want to find out more about you, they can, what, on Instagram, NY Hot Dogs, right?
Yep. Yeah, you got it.
Perfect. Let's keep the conversation going, Dan, and, you know, we'll catch up. There's a couple of people I want to introduce you to see if there's some synergies there that maybe, you know, maybe there's some backup.
I actually might have some big time reporters that might pitch, but shine a light on them.
Yeah, that too.
You can't make a stand by yourself all the time, you know.
No.
Sometimes you need some backup. That's my daughter. Who else do we got? You know, that's hardly gonna do anything, just me and her.
Well,
sometimes you need a third voice, because, you know, if you know anything about politicians, you speak to them twice, they don't want to speak to you a third time.
Well, we're going to see what we can do for you, Dan, and we're coming up on a hard break here. Appreciate you being on the show today. Thank you very much. Jeff, John, you did great today, as always. We are out.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple: develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.